This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehizu Heap. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
Nigeria's vice president traveled to the Niger Delta on Thursday to kick off a major oil spill cleanup effort. His visit comes amid a new insurgency in the oil production heartland by a group calling itself the Niger Delta Avengers.
That's Chris Stein reporting from Lagos. Details coming up.
Also, Somali officials say security forces have killed the gunman who attacked a popular Mogadishu hotel, bringing the death toll from the assault to 24. And the Italian government and Catholic bishops disagree on how to handle the migrant crisis.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Nigeria's vice president traveled to the Niger Delta today to kick off a major oil spill cleanup effort. His visit comes amid a new insurgency in the oil production heartland by a group calling itself the Niger Delta Avengers. It's not the first time an insurgency has broken out in the Delta, but analysts and community activists say this one appears to be different in key ways. Chris Stein reports from Lagos.
First, it was the movement for the emancipation of the Niger Delta. Now, it's the Niger Delta Avengers. The Avengers have taken credit for bombings that affected major pipelines in the Delta, including the Nembe and Forcados pipelines. The attacks have disrupted the supply of natural gas to Nigeria's power plants, leading to extended blackouts across the country. Dilapo Oni, head of energy research at Ecobank, says they've also led to cuts in oil exports in three of Nigeria's oil grades. He says daily production may be down to less than 1 million barrels from the normal 2.2 million per day.
We're talking about the most important grades in Nigeria, Burning Light, Brass River, Forcados.
MEND, as the previous militancy was called, faded away after the government in 2009 instituted an amnesty program that gave ex-militants monthly stipends and enrolled some in training programs. The identity of the Avengers is unknown, but Anthony Goldman, director of Pro Media Consulting, says the new group has learned a thing or two since the days of MEND. Members have taken to Twitter to announce attacks. They also have a blog where they list demands and threaten everyone from Nigeria's military to oil majors like Shell and Chevron, both of whom they've attacked. While MEND kidnapped and occasionally killed oil workers, the Avengers seem more interested in destroying petroleum infrastructure.
This isn't a group that is looking to engage, particularly with the armed forces. It's not a group that has set out to kidnap or ransom in the way that maybe was the case with earlier incarnations of militants.
Nor are they necessarily members of the previous insurgency. They feuded publicly with government Ekpemu Polo, known as Tom Polo, a prominent former militant who is wanted by Nigeria's anti-graft agency. Niger Delta activist Ankio Briggs says while the tactics may have changed, the reasons for this insurgency are the same as when MEND took to arms last decade. The group's demands include a redistribution of the ownership of oil blocks and a cleanup of spills in the Delta. Residents of the region have struggled with widespread poverty and polluted land for decades.
They're still talking about the same issues of the Niger Delta.
In a statement on Wednesday, the military said it would stop the economic saboteurs in the Niger Delta. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
The Italian government and Catholic bishops are at odds over how to deal with the ongoing migrant crisis. Most of the migrants and refugees crossing the Mediterranean are being brought to Italy, usually after being rescued at sea. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments. From Rome, she spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about how Catholic bishops and the Italian government differ on the migrant issue.
Well, it seems that the Italian government is clashing with the Catholic bishops in Italy, who have said that all migrants should be welcomed in Italy. And it's a very strong statement from the head of the Catholic bishops here, Nunzio Galantino, who incidentally is very close to Pope Francis. And he said that last week's deaths that we saw in the Mediterranean were humiliating for Europe, a slap in the face, and that no deaths at all should be tolerated. There should be safe passage, human corridors is the term that they use in Italian, saying that human corridors should be established to guarantee safe passage for anyone who is making that very dangerous journey across the Mediterranean. But late yesterday, the Italian Interior Minister, Angelino Alfano, said that Italy had a big heart but simply can't accept everyone, and that is the challenge for the Italian government to manage this huge wave of migrants that we've seen in the last few days.
So to remind our listeners, when you mention the deaths, we're talking about 800 migrants or more who drowned in the Mediterranean.
Yes, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, has estimated at least 880, I think, at last count. Some are saying even higher. Perhaps we'll never know, but certainly it was a very serious number, a high number of people on different boats, and that's what makes it so difficult to track. 13,000 were saved, but unfortunately not everybody could be saved from those boats that sink so quickly out there at sea.
So what is the Italian government saying should be done to deal with the migrants?
Well, the Italian government plans to open two new hotspots. They're called hotspots. These are centres that are set up to actually process and identify asylum seekers. We're looking at two new hotspots in Sicily, plus what they call six mobile hotspots that will be moving around where the asylum seekers, the refugees, land in Italy. The government is also looking at ordering provinces to accommodate at least 70 migrants each as part of some kind of emergency plan to cope with these new arrivals that we've seen in the past week. The country's 110 provinces would be told to add these migrants in addition to 120,000 that are already being hosted in migrant centres across the country. And that's about 16,000 higher than what we had last year.
So why are the Catholic bishops opposed to these floating hotspots, these ships in the Mediterranean that would take on the migrants and refugees?
This is something that's being debated within the European Union, the idea of setting up a vessel to basically intercept some of these migrant boats before they sink, before they get to the coast of Italy, before they need desperate rescues. But this idea has been rejected by the bishops. They say that any move to have something in the Mediterranean with the power to allow or disallow migrants to make that passage is unacceptable, and that all migrants should have the right to be welcomed and treated humanely.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome speaking with VOA's Jody Capua.
Also, there was a fight among refugees on the Greek island of Lesbos. It's now a detention center holding 2,500 people who arrived from Turkey after March 20th. That's when the deal between the European Union and Turkey took effect to restrict the flow of migrants and refugees to Greece. From Greece, reporter Mariana Karakoulaki spoke to Joe DiCapua about the migrant unrest.
According to Greek media, a fight broke out between a group of Afghans and a group of Pakistanis. The camp was set on fire. It's not sure how this happened. There is no official confirmation, but reportedly 15 people have been injured, and the camp was temporarily evacuated.
Would you describe what's happening on Lesbos? There was a time when it was more of a humanitarian place, but now it's a detention center.
Well, basically, after March 20th, Lesbos, from a transit point and a humanitarian place, transformed it into detention centers, prisons. I think the Coast Guard is in charge of these camps. Several organizations have left because they do not agree with this approach. And now everyone that arrived in Greece from the Turkish shores, they are being taken by the Coast Guard or by Frontex or NATO, depends who is patrolling the waters there. And they are being detained. Inside the center, in theory, they apply for asylum. If their application is valid, for example, a Syrian cannot go back, for example, then in theory, they should apply for relocation or for official asylum in Greece. And all the others, that their applications are denied, they return back to Turkey as part of the Turkish-EU agreement. We don't have a clear image of what's happening inside the camps because journalists are not allowed in. They can only observe from the outside. And there's not much information coming out because volunteers are not allowed in and the largest organizations deny accessing the camps, such as the MSF and the UNHCR.
What's the situation on the mainland following the closure of the makeshift migrant camp and refugee camp at Idomeni?
Well, when Idomeni was evacuated, quite a few people left before the evacuation, and they went around Idomeni into three sites. It's a hotel called Hara Hotel and two gas stations. This area has become some kind of a small Idomeni, as they call it. However, there are plans to evacuate it. All the others were taken into centers inside Greece. These are either relocation centers or temporary camps. The conditions are awful, actually. I was into one of them yesterday. It's not for someone to live in. However, I can see that this will be improved in time. There was also an incident yesterday, on Wednesday, of two Iraqi boys who are in the camp of Petra. They lost their lives as they tried to swim into a water tank.
That's reporter Mariama Karakulaki. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiss Wuhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Nigeria's vice president traveled to the Niger Delta to kick off a major oil spill cleanup effort today. And the Italian government and Catholic bishops are at odds over how to deal with the ongoing migrant crisis. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Somali officials say security forces have killed the gunman who attacked a popular Mogadishu hotel, bringing the death toll from the assault to 24. Security Minister Abdurrazzaq Omar Mohamed tells VOA Somali service three gunmen died during a shootout in the Ambassador Hotel this morning. He says 57 hostages have been rescued. The attack began late yesterday afternoon with a car bomb outside the hotel that killed a fourth attacker. 12 civilians, three security guards, and two members of parliament were among those killed. The Al-Shabaab militant group has claimed responsibility for the attack. The attack came just hours after Somali officials announced a top Al-Shabaab commander had been killed in southern Somalia. Mohamed Mahmoud allegedly masterminded the April 2015 attack on Kenya's Garissa University College that left 148 people dead, nearly all of them students.
Kenya's government has welcomed the reported death of the Al-Shabaab militant who allegedly organized the massacre at Garissa University College last year. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Kenyan spokesman Eric Karathe says the government welcomes the news that special forces in southern Somalia had killed the suspected organizer of the April 2015 attack on Kenya's Garissa University. In an interview with VOA in Nairobi, Karathe said his death will help heal the wounds left by the deadly assault.
What we would want to say as a government is that every victory against terrorism is very welcome. The pain and suffering of the parents, friends, and relatives of those who died in Garissa is still very fresh amongst us, and therefore it's a little bit of relief that those who are responsible are finally getting it. Although it would have been greater for us if we had an opportunity to bring them to justice.
Mohamed Mahmoud, better known as Dulia Dane, was believed to be the organizer of the gruesome attack, in which Al-Shabaab gunmen killed 148 people, nearly all of them students. Miriam Njiri was a student at Garissa University at the time, but has since transferred to Moi University in Eldoret, after that school admitted all Garissa students unconditionally following the attack.
Now that the mastermind is dead, I'm so happy, I'm so relieved. I'm relieved that we will not plan another attack on another university, but I'm also afraid that another mastermind will come up.
Dulia Dane was killed Tuesday night in the town of Bulo Gadud, a town loyal to al-Shabaab, about 30 kilometers north of the port of Kismayo. A local Somali official told VOA that Dulia Dane was killed in a raid by U.S.-trained Somali commandos. Another official said the militant was killed by U.S. missiles. However, a U.S. military spokesman said Thursday that American forces played only an advise and assist role in a ground operation carried out by the Somali National Army. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
In the U.S. state of Minnesota, a jury is deliberating the fate of three Somali American men who are charged with attempting to leave the country to join ISIS. Prosecutors say lending technical assistance to terrorist groups violates U.S. law. The defendants are Mohammed Abdelhamid Farah, Abdulrahman Yassin Daoud, and Guled Ali Omar. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has been tracking them since March 2014. One member of the group aroused suspicion when he applied for an expedited passport to travel to Turkey, but was not able to answer basic questions about his planned trip. Joseph Weber, associate professor of journalism at the University of Nebraska, is following the trial. Reporter Iman Falestine of the VOA Somali service asked him about the case.
They seem to have a pretty damning case. We haven't seen the defense yet, of course. We've just seen the prosecution. But it does sound like these fellows were definitely committed to going at least on and off over the period of time that they were under investigation. They, in fact, seem quite eager to go and aid ISIS.
Yesterday and today, there was a little bit chaos outside the court between the families. How you feel the reaction of the families? How this case affected the community?
Well, that's one of the things that I'm looking into as part of my research. My sense of it initially is that the community seems to be somewhat split, and in fact, some of the families are split. There's a segment of people who seem to believe that the government has basically entrapped these boys, that they set them up and this is all rigged, that they wouldn't have gone if it were not for the encouragement of the government. That's one group. And then there's another group that thinks that these boys were in the wrong and should not have gone. As I understand it, there were some members of the families of at least one of the defendants who attempted to stop him from going. In fact, took his passport away, so he wasn't able to go. So clearly the family was aware of that, and they were not happy about the idea of him going, so they tried to restrain him.
What do you find out your research?
Well, it's very early in the research. The kind of questions that I'm looking into, though, are, you know, I don't have answers to, but the kind of questions that I'm looking into are things such as, what is it that motivates people to try to join a terrorist organization? Some of the testimony, some of the documents in this case have been quite illuminating on that. These boys seem to be, and I call them boys because they were boys when they started, they seem to have a passionate religious commitment, they seem to be ideologically committed, but my sense is also that their knowledge was really very shallow, and they were heavily propagandized by videos. So as a consequence of this, they thought they were going to be heroic, and they were going to go off and do something for the salvation of Muslims, but on a very flimsy intellectual basis. It's very shallow. I'm amazed at how passionate their commitment was. Secondly, they're adolescent boys, and you have to understand, and I've found this through my studies of other cult organizations, cults appeal to people at a very susceptible time in their lives, oftentimes in adolescence or immediate post-adolescence, because frankly, their brains aren't formed, they don't know who they are, they're trying to find themselves, define themselves as not their parents. That seems to be the case here as well. I've been talking to some people involved in the case who say these guys were looking at lives of not a great deal of accomplishment. The idea of joining ISIS to them seemed like a heroic mission. It is naive, it is stupid, it is foreign to us as Americans, but you can kind of understand it if you look at it as an adolescent phenomenon. The other thing that's kind of interesting is, I need to develop this more, but I'm troubled by the racial component in this case. All the defendants in this case are Somali, and all the defendants are black. They all seem to be from modest or very poor circumstances, not a lot of really successful jobs and so on facing them. I'm troubled by their perhaps isolation. That may be contributing to this. We've seen this phenomenon with some of the terrorists in the suburbs of Paris, where it's a much worse problem. I'm troubled by the idea that possibly here in the U.S. we're seeing a repeat of that phenomenon.
That was reporter Iman Falestine of the VOA Somali Service. She spoke to University of Nebraska journalism professor Joseph Weber.
The French government says it is seriously concerned about threats being made to a journalist in Burundi. Isidra Sindikumana is a reporter for AFP and Radio France International. The French news agency says he had been tortured by security forces last August and is now the target of threats on social media. The threats were made after the Burundi government accused him of using his stories to promote crime and violence. The French Foreign Ministry condemns the threats against Ndikumana and calls on the Burundi government to ensure press freedom. It says it is essential that journalists are able to exercise their profession in total independence and security. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee.